Database DevOps with Stephanie Herr.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. This podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results through its ClearMeasure Way methodology. And new announcements in the last few episodes, my architect forums are going strong. Signups for the next sessions are up. And if you lead a software team and are looking to collaborate with peer architect leaders, sign up at the link in the show notes. And for those looking for Programming with Palermo, my video podcast, just search in any of the directories, you'll find it. Our guest today on the show is Stephanie Herr, and she is a product manager for database DevOps at Redgate Software. She's been an instrumental part of every database DevOps product at Redgate for the past 13 years and has spoken at industry conferences such as DevOps World and more. Stephanie, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Jeffrey. I'm great. Really happy to be here. I thought it was a great way to kick off the year.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, for guests who might not be familiar with you or have heard you speak at the various conferences, can you give us a little bit of background on your career and kind of what are the high points that led you into working on the things that you're working on now?
Sure. I started as a software developer long time ago with ASP.NET applications and SQL Server backends. Actually, before that, my very first project ever was a Cold Fusion based with a Oracle 8i backend, and really got into web development and really loved the idea of web development just because you could make changes and see it reflected on the website pretty quickly. From there, I kind of started to fall into the database person at the company and kind of started as an accidental DBA. And then, you know, nobody else was doing the job and kind of became the database development lead. So I worked across a lot of projects on just making sure the database development was right and how we deploy these and worked across both the development and the operation teams. I was on a waterfall project that was kind of 10 years into the project. And I was put on the project because they're like, we're almost done. We just have a few more months to get to that final release. And I was brought in to help kind of replan how we were going to get those final steps to release it. And we've spent months, got all the experts in a room and replanned this project and even built in all the slack time. And we were so excited. Like, we had this new plan. It was approved. And 2 weeks into the plan, we were already behind schedule and off schedule. So that's really when I started to say there has to be a better way than this big planning up front, and luckily got on some teams that were really looking at releasing faster and getting user feedback and getting involved, getting stakeholders involved early and often, and just really loved that approach. And then soon after, I had the opportunity to start working at Redgate. And it was just amazing because here I was being able to kind of take these ideas of application development and delivery of going faster and being more agile and applying that to databases and trying to help other teams out there deliver their database faster and keep up with this agile DevOps world. So
awesome. So you've had the firsthand experience that so many others have had around changes not only to the system, but to the database that just are slow, error prone. What is it, in your opinion, that makes the database and all kinds of various ways to store data so different from just application development? How do you think of that?
Yeah, good question. So I was kind of very glad that I wasn't the production DBA. I was the developer DBA. I was in charge of the development, the build, the test environments, but I wasn't the production DBA. I worked with a production DBA for deployments, and it was not the funnest experience. You know, all the application developers went home, and my company at the time was US based and we were in the East Coast, and we had to do our deployments on Thursday night at 9 p.m. because that's when we thought the California office was closed. And I was like, all the application developers are home sleeping, and here I am stressed out. Is this release going to go well? And, you know, it was probably like, you know, the first time I talked to the production DBA in 4 or 5 months from our last release. And, you know, they didn't know what changes we were making. They were very nervous about, you know, any change, because if we broke something, if we slowed something down, they were the ones that were going to get paged in the middle of the night. They were the ones that, you know, had to put out the fires. And yeah, just even back then, you know, data security and privacy was such a big issue that it was really sealed off. So the database, there are just a lot more complications than the application. And, you know, if you have to undo your application, it's like, okay, let's get the previous version out there. But with the database, depending on when you find the error, like, did we find the error as part of a release? Okay, we can just undo it. Did we find the error, you know, like a few days later and we've collected some data, or data's been changed since then? You can't just roll back because you can't lose that data. So it definitely adds additional complexities when you're talking about development and deployments.
Yeah, yeah. Now, over the last, probably over a decade, I think there's been a lot of conversations in the DevOps world about databases and disagreements about how to do it in the best fashion. Where has your mind gone over that time about, okay, what really works the best as far as a pattern goes, and what patterns didn't really pan out?
Yeah. So I've been with Redgate almost 14 years now. And when I started at Redgate, I was a project manager for SQL Source Control, which was really our very first tool for versioning database changes. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it takes the state of every single object. So the create DDL for your tables, procedures, views, functions, triggers, and puts it into version control. So each object is in its own script, which is really nice because then you can see how each object changes over time. And this is what we refer to as a state-based approach, where, you know, you're capturing the state and seeing how those objects change. And then at some point, you have to generate your deployment script, and you're comparing, you know, your state and version control against a target database and saying, how do I make that target database look like this and kind of generate this deployment script for me? And with the Redgate comparison technology, we could kind of handle all these dependencies for you and the order of deployments and make sure you don't, you know, forget anything that needs to also change as part of that table change. So that's the state-based approach. And that's where we started, about 14 years ago. And even for, you know, 8 years before that, we had just our SQL compare technology. And that really works great in, you know, maybe when you're doing releases that aren't that frequent, or, you know, you have that time to review the script that's generated. And when I started 14 years ago, like, a lot of people we talked to on the database side had never really heard about source control or versioning. Mm-hmm. And so it's really exciting to see how far we've come, you know, in the past decade, because now it's like everybody we talk to knows they want to do it. And some teams are still figuring out how, or some teams, you know, have gotten their database and version control, but what's the next step with the continuous integration, continuous delivery? But about 2017, a little bit before then, we actually realized as teams were deploying more, there's a few situations where a state-based approach, you know, doesn't work in an automated fashion, because if you're changing a column name, a state-based approach will see, you know, the new column exists, that old column doesn't exist, let me drop that. Now, there's all kinds of things built into our tools to warn about data loss and, you know, stop the build if there's going to be data loss. But if you're moving more into a continuous delivery and, you know, you want your changes to go through and you need more control over the deployment script, that's where we see a migrations approach coming in to automated deployments, because a migrations approach, we kind of feel like we're shifting left. And instead of generating the deployment script when it comes time to deploy to the target, we're generating the deployment script at development time. So you can say, this is exactly how I want that change to go. And if you need to update any, you know, transactional data alongside that, you have full control over the script and how it's going to run. And then that's in version control. So you also have this ability to audit and see the exact script that was run. You know, I have horror stories of we ran this script on test and our test environment, and there was a little bit of an issue. So we tweaked it and then, you know, we ran it on production and then just closed the window without saving it. So like, we didn't really have that exact script that was used. So being able to version control not only your objects at the DDL level, because that's going to give you object level history. It's going to give you if there's any conflicts on objects. If, you know, you change table one in migration two and table one in migration three, well, two separate migration scripts won't show us conflicts. But because you have the object definition of that table, you're going to be able to identify those conflicts and, you know, work out merge. Merge is easier with that information. So really, we've come from a state-based world of just getting your object scripts in version control and letting a tool generate the deployment for you, for bringing that earlier and giving you more control over the deployment script, getting that in version control, and then using that deployment script so it's exactly the same through all your target environments.
That's a really good explanation that you just said about state-based versus migration-based. Let me see if I understood like that key difference. You said with the state-based approach, the script that's going to be run is generated during the deployment after inspection of the target database. But with the migration, you generate, the developer generates the script, what, even before a pull request?
So I've seen teams do it either before a pull request. A few teams I'm working with now have found a really nice workflow where they actually change it after the pull request because they want to make sure, you know, everything looks right. And then as part of the pull request, they generate the migration script and then that also gets reviewed. But then that gets, you know, stored in version control, pushed to the main branch and then released through the pipeline as part of that process, part of that automated process.
But either way, during the development process, not during the deployment process. That's a big difference.
It's a big difference, yeah. It's not really a big difference because it's again bringing that script just closer into the development. And this is really when, you know, when I think about DevOps and getting the DBAs involved, and you know, it really depends on the team and how much knowledge they have. And maybe for simple changes, you know, developers are confident making those changes. But, you know, if it's a larger architectural change or collecting a lot more data, how do we want to normalize this? Like getting that DBA involved earlier so that they can, you know, be part of the change from the beginning and make sure it's kind of right from the beginning and understand this is the best way to deploy that. Hey, we don't want to put an index on this table and then update it. Let's make all the updates first and then add the index. And that's really where, you know, the DBA can help with how are we going to deploy this in the, you know, most performant way.
Yeah. Yeah. Now when either creating a database or deploying some incremental changes, I know about the, if you have any stored procedures or the tables and the columns and the indexes, but sometimes there's like, I don't know, a list of states in the country that need to be shown in a drop down in the box that needs to be in data. There's all kinds of other stuff. How do you categorize all the different types of things that might need to be deployed or changed?
Exactly. Because we were kind of talking about object level changes to tables, procedures, functions, but configuration data or lookup data is also really important. The ability to track that. So, you know, states might not change all that often, but there might be some data like driving your application, then you want to track like, you know, this was our initial set of data on this date, you know, my coworker X added those changes, it got deployed on this date. So we call this static data. And this is data, you know, that doesn't change often. It's also referred to as reference or lookup data. And you want to be able to track that and version control that alongside, you know, alongside the deployment, because if you deploy the object changes and don't have the corresponding configuration data, you know, the application might not work. So you really need to, if the changes need to go together, you know, have it as part of the same pull request, associate it with the same work item, you know, because we want those changes to be deployed together as part of the same release.
Yeah, it's almost like there are some types of records that kind of are part, they're part of the schema. If they're not there, your schema is broken for that application.
Exactly. Some teams use like enumerations in the code, but they also have backend, you know, database entries that help, you know, with constraints and making sure only the correct data is being populated in the database. So that's really important to track alongside that. We also see teams maybe track database level settings because this is information. If I'm spinning up a new database, like exactly how do you want to provision it and things like that. So to me, it's more of a infrastructure as code and, you know, database as code and trying to make sure that everything you need as part of the database is in version control and kind of can be rebuilt from scratch if needed.
Yeah. Now, Redgate's been a leader in just database, all kinds of database products for a long time. What's kind of the latest in the Redgate products that everyone should know about?
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. I've been working on Flyway desktop for the past 2 years, and Redgate, you know, has been a Microsoft partner from the very, very early days. And we've always had extremely strong in the SQL server area and Azure SQL databases with Microsoft. But actually, 10 years ago, we actually created a database comparison technology for Oracle as well. As we work with these bigger organizations or as we work with companies that then acquire other companies, you know, not they don't all just use SQL Server. Also with more cloud databases and some developers just, you know, choosing a different database backend, we just see more and more of these cross-database, multi-database, you know, organizations. So we actually acquired Flyway in 2019, which is an open source migrations framework. So again, it tracks which scripts are run against your target environments and then will automate the deployments of them. So for the past 2 years, and this actually expands Redgate to not just supporting SQL Server, but we support over 20 different relational database management systems now. So Postgres, MySQL, DB2, the list is on our website. You know, that's just really exciting going from we can support your SQL Server needs to we can support, you know, any database you're working on any platform, Windows, Linux, Mac, you know, in any environment, whether that's on-prem or cloud. So it's really been a big shift for us over the past 2 years to extend beyond SQL Server. And the Flyway desktop product is really exciting because Flyway has always been a command line, and we've seen other tools like GitHub desktop or Docker desktop just be able to kind of provide an interface maybe for people new to Flyway or, you know, maybe different team members. Some are familiar with a command line and then maybe, you know, management or someone else wants to just see an overview of what's been applied where. We have this desktop capability with Flyway desktop and the Flyway enterprise tier that we've been working on. We go beyond just the migration scripts that Flyway provides in its open source capability, but we also bring in the ability to generate these change reports and generate that object level history. So again, it's not just a migrations world, migrations for deployment, but also this object level history. So it's easier to understand what's changed over time, can get back to a previous version easier than, you know, reading through a bunch of version migration scripts and generate reports on, you know, has my database drifted? So my last deployment, my database was in this state. Before I do my next deployment, is my database still in that state I expect it? Or did something change on production? Because if I'm deploying to production and, you know, even though I thought my script was tested through the pipeline, but on my test or pre-prod staging environment, you know, it was in a different state than what production's in, then all the tests that I did in my pipeline, you know, won't catch an issue if the change in production is related to my script. So trying to highlight those areas to, again, make sure the release is successful as possible and safe, and highlight those areas and give DBAs kind of control and more insight into what those changes are to determine, like, you know, well, do I need to stop this release and, you know, create a new pre-prod environment and run it there first? Or, hey, did the drift happen in a completely unrelated area of this release and I can still push that through? So it's really exciting.
That's interesting. So, yeah, there's several migrations tools along the way. I guess you, in the pull request, you can look at the raw script that's about to be run, but that's about it. You're kind of just with your eyeballs looking all through that code. So tell me more about what the DBA view is. If there's multiple scripts, it'll show the net change together.
So there's a few things that the enterprise solution does. Is it definitely gives you the exact script. So for any migration script that hasn't been run on that target yet, we, you know, put it in the correct order and say, here's the script that will be run on that target environment. But we also produce a change report that says, you know, on an object by object basis, here's the number of objects that are being added, here's the number being modified, and here's the number being deleted. So, you know, at a glance, they can see how big is this release, and, you know, is there any objects being deleted? I might want to look at those, you know, a little bit closer. And I find it much easier to kind of review this side by side comparison report of how my object changes versus, you know, reading a really long SQL script.
Yes.
So the change report is that high level overview, you know, the drift detection to make sure my test and pre-production environment is really reflective and I've had a really good, you know, dress rehearsal of this deployment before going to prod. And then also something I forgot to mention when we were talking earlier is at the end of the year, we've also integrated SQL Fluff to run code analysis rules as part of a pipeline. Mm-hmm. So to catch best practices and make sure you're not using deprecated syntax, or we've also, in the enterprise edition of Flywave, we've extended to this to have custom rules. So if there are any updates without a where clause or any, you know, deletes without a where clause. And we've even been able to ship custom rules to help with naming conventions. If you want all your tables to start with TBL underscore, there can be a rule for that and it'll fail the build. So it doesn't get deployed to your downstream environment. So code analysis, again, kind of taking the best practices from the application world and catching these issues early and building in these standards that, you know, you don't want a person to be reviewing each script and checking these for. If there's anything we can automate and put in these code analysis rules and make the pipeline more reliable, robust, those are the areas we're looking into.
So SQL Fluff, I think there's probably a good number of listeners who've never heard of that term. What is that again?
So SQL Fluff is an open source kind of linting tool for SQL, and it is cross database as well. So they kind of have rules that, you know, help with best practices. So looking for an example, here's our rules reference here. If you just Google SQL Fluff, it'll come right up. So in Flyway, we've wrapped this just so that, you know, it's already part of your setup. But in the Flyway Enterprise tier, we have these additional rules for the naming conventions and things. But you can have, you know, rules if you want to kind of make sure your keywords are uppercase, or make sure you don't have trailing space. So it kind of keeps your code clean and easier to read, but also best practices, especially in the SQL Server world. You don't want to use select star in a stored procedure. It's kind of bad practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of having somebody eyeball it, it's just, you know, if you use select star, that's going to fail the build. And, you know, then you're going to get that feedback quick, right? Like, there's something wrong with this. Oh, it broke this rule. Don't use select star. Okay, I can fix that easily and quickly. And then, you know, my build will pass.
So for people using Flyway, do they automatically get SQL Fluff, or do they have to do something extra to get it active?
If they're using the Docker container, it's built into it. which is really nice. And whatever version of Flyway you're on, whether it's community, teams, or enterprise, you get the open source SQL fluff rules. And then in Flyway Teams, you get some more configuration settings. And in Flyway Enterprise, we've added our own Redgate rules on top of that to go a little bit further than what you get with SQL fluff.
I think that's huge. We actually talked a lot about static code analysis for C Sharp and HTML and other code, but to have it for database syntax as well, that's huge. Just to know that you guys have done the research into what the options are, and you've chosen SQL fluff. Like, because the average developer out there might say, okay, I need some static analyzer for every type of code that I have. Which one should I pick? That's a lot of brain damage.
Yeah, because we've had a static code analysis for SQL Server, and we've had static code analysis for Oracle, again, because we've been working with those systems more. But once we went Flyway, want to be more cross-database, we found SQL Fluff to be really nice because it does support a lot of the databases that Flyway supports. So it's something that, again, will work across your entire estate instead of, you know, just SQL Server or just Oracle.
Yeah. And in that summary report, I have my own horror story back in my career when one of the database changes. Now, this is a long time ago when the database changes were being manually applied, but one of them had a change to an index. And of course, after it was applied, it wreaked havoc because we never should have changed that index. but just to know, it's like, okay, this is a number of tables changed, indexes changed, or that would have called that out right at the start.
We also have integration with SQL Monitor, our monitoring solution that shows performance, CPU reads. Mm. And when you do a release with Flyway or our previous SQL Server only solutions, it actually will mark it on the SQL Monitor graph that, hey, a release happened. So if a DBA is looking at Monitor and notice, hey, there's been this big, you know, performance change, and hey, this release happened, you can then jump back right into, you know, this change report that we were talking about and say, what change? Like, was this why that performance, you know, is different on my server? So kind of the integration of even after the deployment, being able to see the visibility of, hey, that deployment happened. That might be the first thing you want to check if production issues are starting to be reported. So really excited about that. And I guess that's some other big news from Redgate as well, is our SQL Monitor solution is going cross-database as well and looking at PostgreSQL. So again, not just SQL Server, but this cross-database world that we're now living in.
Right. Well, with so many listeners targeting Azure and all the different ways that data can be stored in Azure, do you guys have all the Azure services completely covered? Or are there certain ones that you're working on?
So, I mean, Azure's like constantly changing, but we do work with Azure SQL Database. I know we're testing against the Cosmos for Postgres right now that came out at the end of last year or late last year. Mm-hmm. And definitely just, you know, listening to our customers about what they're using, what they find, because yeah, we just want to make sure that we're supporting them and meeting their needs.
Yeah, I also see Azure Synapse is even on that Flyway list of databases supported. And Synapse is pretty recent.
Mm-hmm. I think there's like Google Cloud Spanner and
databases I've never heard of on that list.
Awesome. Over 20 different, databases. So definitely, it's kind of nice because if you are using one of those databases for a unique use case, you know, you can kind of have the same process because we do see that there's some teams that kind of want to manage this at a higher level and can kind of pull this data out of the Flyway tables to say, you know, number of releases. Oh, well, we're kind of running out of time because this could be a whole topic
go
on
for
itself.
It. Go for it.
Flyway has an undo feature, so you could see, you know, how many scripts have been undone, so maybe failed releases, but why this could be a big topic is, you know, I have a lot of discussions with teams on whether, you know, using undo scripts is the best approach versus, you know, just fixing forward, rolling forward. But I do see a lot of teams really taking advantage of the undo scripts. And again, depending on the change, can be really powerful, especially in the Enterprise Edition. Redgate generates the the version migration script, the script to bring it up, and also the undo script to bring it down. And we do that both for the objects in your database, but also for that static data and reference data as well.
Okay.
So we see a lot of teams using this undo feature just as a, you know, a safety net. If I need to back these changes out, you know, how can I do that? We also talk to a lot of teams about, you know, making your database change first that is backwards compatible with the application. So you roll your database change out first. If it's working, then you can bring the application. And then if you need to roll back, some teams just don't roll the database back, right? Leave that there, revert the code. It's backwards compatible. You can keep working with it and then roll a fix forward. So there's all kinds of things that we're seeing teams do with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as we kind of close out, my last question, you've been immersed in the space of database DevOps for over a decade. Fast forward another 5-10 years, where do you see database DevOps going? And DevOps might not be a buzzword, you know, into the future, but definitely we'll be working with databases and changing them frequently. So where do you see our industry going in that regard?
I like what you said about working with databases and changing them frequently, because there's some teams now that, you know, because it's a legacy database, don't feel like they can change it or worried about breaking things. So yeah, I kind of just want to get rid of this. I can only deploy my database changes, you know, at night, off hours. And that's not even possible for, you know, companies that are global and don't have those off hours and downtimes. But just really, yeah, making database changes, you know, as easy as deploying the application code. One of the big things that we're excited about is we've had a cloning technology for SQL Server for the past, 4 years or more years now. And this really comes into our database DevOps story when you're doing dedicated database development. So each developer has their own copy of the database, but you're not taking up, you know, terabytes of disk space or anything. And you can spin it up really quickly. So if I make a mistake, I can just, you know, roll back to my previous version of my database really quickly. Spinning it up as part of a CI/CD process and pipelines. I've worked with some teams that have been really able to decrease their time of testing because they've spun up multiple databases and test against, break their test across those databases. Even internally, you know, we support SQL Server 2012, 2018, 2022. So being able to spin up three different databases on those different editions and run all the tests, you know, to check like, hey, we didn't break anything on older versions is really kind of exciting for me. And I hope I'm not pre-announcing anything, but at the end of this month, this quarter, we are releasing Redgate Clone, which is bringing our cloning technology that was just for SQL Server cross database. So we'll have the cloning capability for Postgres, MySQL, Oracle, you know, and SQL Server. And in addition, our current SQL Server cloning capability is at a database level. You manage a SQL Server instance and you make clones onto that instance. The new technology actually works at an instance level. So if your backend application has four different SQL Server databases, our new database Redgate clone technology will spin up an instance with those four databases. So really helps with any kind of legacy systems with cross-database dependencies, linked servers, things like that. So it's super exciting. And I feel like that's going to be a lot of where we see people going to, again, try to make sure that you're testing against realistic environment, realistic data sets earlier in the process and giving you this capability to spin up instances as needed, replicate, you know, a production issue at this version. So really exciting about those areas.
When you say work at the instance level, do you mean that if you have given instance of SQL Server with all kinds of stuff on it, you can install a new database instance that's empty and it'll clone everything about that instance?
So we're using containers.
Okay.
So we'll create the instance for you and put all the databases on it for you. So definitely a lot less management of you setting up the instance yourself.
That is huge. Yeah. I mean, cloning a database, that's really useful, but the entire instance, I mean, that's basically, hey, how do I reset up a new SQL Server and make sure that it's exactly the same as the other one? Wow. Okay. That is an exciting announcement. Fantastic. All right. Well, we could talk for a long time about this stuff, but where can listeners find you and find Flyway and all the things that we talked about? Where should we point them?
If they just want to go to redgate.com, www.redgate.com, that's kind of our landing page and they'll be able to find Flyway on there. Yeah, database DevOps is definitely a big focus for us, or just search for Redgate Flyway. And I'd love, you know, to hear if there's listeners out there currently using Flyway, if there's anything, you know, any additional things that they're interested in. Really looking forward to hearing how they're using it as part of an automated pipeline. We didn't even get to talk about, you know, Azure DevOps, but we see most of our customers actually using Azure DevOps repos and builds and this whole YAML files and pipelines as code. We're working with a lot of customers setting that up and using Azure DevOps templates as part of their database deployment pipeline, so that it's, you know, basically you can set up a pipeline for this project here and then use that same template on your next projects, change a few connection strings, and your pipeline's ready to go. So I'm really excited about the Azure DevOps pipelines integration we're working on too. And that's all on our website, examples and videos, trainings of how you can use Flyway Desktop as part of Azure DevOps pipelines.
Awesome. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. Well, Stephanie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and sharing with us what the latest of database DevOps is at Redgate. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Oh, my pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.